Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire, episode 80. Yes, nearly forgot it. Nearly, but I didn't. And I'm stalling because I forgot what else to save from here. As usual, I'm joined with the also mighty, the man who's like got the fight against YouTube at the minute, Ken Brewson.
Hello, everybody. Royal Sperm, thank you very much. It's Lisa Kay.
We will ignore the YouTube Watergate and go on to our next guest this evening. You may have heard of him. He buggered off a wee while ago. Like, 8 months, 5 days, 8 hours and maybe 50 minutes ago. He's back. Welcome. No. Don't cry, Stuart. Welcome back, Mike Banner.
Where the fuck's the theme music?
Next time. I know you weren't around for fucking the live music, were you? Wait, you were for like one episode. Then you left for Korea. See, that was big enough, the things out of if the music's that bad. I'm not going
to... I was waiting for the music to kick in and the, you know, the voiceover dude.
This is so last minute, I've not actually had a chance to think of tune.
See, since I've been gone, standards have gone down. In my
Let's use the same song that the Blowhard podcast uses, the Electric Six song. I want to take you to a gay bar. How do you like that so much?
Decision denied. So things like that will get you 10
off
YouTube, Ken.
Listeners.
And they're still bickering people, Stu and Mike. It's as if they've never left each other.
But yeah, this is Mike joining us. Well, his last episode with us was Podcast on Fire 66. So I'm actually surprised we've recorded that much episodes since then. I could honestly thought we've just done five.
In busy little bees.
So, start this one like every other time. Ken, last movie you watched?
Yeah, we're I'm well behind on the fun forum 365 movies in 365 days competition, and I'm treating it as a competition. But still, I'm over the 30th mark, and I think the 31st movie was Happy Hour. And that's a Hong Kong movie from 1995, directed by Benny Chan, when Benny Chan was interesting. Nowadays, Benny Chan doesn't interest me personally at all with his big commercial movies, the latest being the rather laughed at City Under Siege.
I think that's where it's like the Hulk like mutant
and Aaron Kwok in a cowboy outfit of some sort, and I saw that still, and I asked Ross at Love HQ Film who posted it on Twitter, is that really from City Under Siege or just from Aaron's personal portfolio? But he was like, nope, it's in the film. Of course.
Is it a neon pink cowboy outfit?
It was rather subdued for Aaron. It was, I guess, the relevant Wild West colors, if you will, brown. So, but Benny Chan doesn't interest me nowadays. Overlong movies, it's easier for me to take on a 90s movie like Happy Hour rather than his two-hour Invisible Target kind of things. It just, they may be good, but it's just hard for me to sit down with him nowadays. So it's just a personal preference, really. Even though a movie like Invisible Target might be solid, but I don't need 140 minutes or however long it is to tell me that. Happy Hour, like 5 years after A Moment of Romance. It's made under the production company UFO, founded by Peter Chan and Eric Tsang, I believe, whose aim, I guess, was to produce solid professional contemporary stories in Hong Kong cinema, often starring the likes of Tony Leung Chiu Wai and Jordan Chan. I believe He's a Woman, She's a Man, I think it was called that. It was produced under UFO. Jordan Chan was in that. But so Happy Hour, it turns out, it starts out happily enough. These three guys, played by Jordan Chan, Andy Hoy, and Julian Jung, they are out on the town and go to a bar. It's happy hour. Meet this girl who's very flirtatious, you know, and they take her home and they smoke weed. They sing Stand By Me. They all have sex with her. She attempts to kill herself.
All parties have to end on a downer, eh?
Oh, it's a very much a downer.
Sounded like a good night out until the last bit.
And that's exactly the smart way this movie is structured for a bit. That it, you know, it breaks into quite heavy darkness. She survives the fall, is hospitalized, and while her family is singing over her deathbed, I was about to say, her hospital bed, she wakes up and she blurts out, "They raped me!" And all of a sudden, these three guys are put on trial, and the media is having a field day, and it's the court drama, the friendship is torn, friendships are torn apart, careers are crushed, and this would have been a solid movie if Benny Chan and company had decided not to feature comedy after this dark break. Because, for instance, in the courtroom proceedings, early on in the courtroom proceedings, the three guys are sitting and between themselves drawing little cartoons on their palms and laughing at that whilst they follow the court proceedings. And then it doesn't work. It's inappropriate. And this movie is one of those very rare cases. Remember, all the category of re-exploitation I watch, I have no reaction towards in terms of politically correct and morally correct. This is one where my radar went off. This mix didn't sit well with me for those two reasons, that I thought it was uncomfortable to watch, but I thought it was so dumb and sad that they didn't decide to go with a gloomy movie and a familiar movie, I'll have to say, because the template is has been done to death before in various other movies outside of Hong Kong, but it could have been so solid if they had taken it seriously. And it's not broad Hong Kong comedy like we know. The switch into broad Hong Kong comedy, it's not that. It's different, but it doesn't work. And it's a shame. But having said all that, by the way, after I wrap it up, Lau Ching-wan plays this kooky, oddball, sharp lawyer, who is the best performer in the movie, but still his oddball quirky ways, it really doesn't work either. And it's a damn shame to treat the story template in quirky fashion rather than go for the familiar court and character drama that could have been really, really solid with really, really solid performances to go with that. But it dies a quick death. But I have a feeling this movie will play out differently depending on the kind of person you are. So I would recommend watching it just to see what your reaction would be towards the developments, the light developments after the dark is introduced. But still, way more interesting stuff than Benny Chan produces and directs nowadays.
Kind of reminds me what you were saying there about there was a story maybe a month or two back about this kind of low-level singer in China, this girl, kind of pop singer. And there was a video of her singing, but miming, and she was giving it away rather badly because she was holding the microphone upside down, singing into the wrong end. Okay, so everybody had a good laugh about that. And then I think a few weeks later, she tried to commit suicide. Because she was the first person in the country to be prosecuted under new anti-lip-syncing Chinese laws.
Whoa.
Now, you see, it's funny until you get to the suicide bit. And then after that, it's not funny anymore.
And it shouldn't be funny either.
It kind of kills it stone dead. It reminds me of the what you said about the film. I think once you get to the suicide and everything, it's going to be very difficult it's going to be very difficult to claw some hilarity things after that.
You know how it would have worked or been more tolerable would have been if they decided to go all out with the broad comedy, basically, you know, bringing the banana peel, so to say, because it would have been so out there Hong Kong-ish. Like, they didn't just do that, but UFO always tried to be more intelligent about the storytelling, but this was not an intelligent decision. It's a different comedic decision than what you usually see in 80s, 90s Hong Kong movies. And it's difficult to explain why that is, but if you know your Hong Kong movies, you'll immediately see that Happy Hour is different in its in the comedy. And they even fucking seen Stand By Me at the last court proceeding before the judge comes out and all that. And I think the judge comes out when the guys are all, you know, in the middle of singing Stand By Me. And it's just like literally cringe-worthy stuff. Wow. Good song inappropriately used. And who knows if they even paid for that song, you know, the way Hong Kong movies work. So if this would have been a Western release and they realized this song is not paid for, wonder what they had replaced it with, you know, what kind of song they had to use instead. So that would have been amusing. But yeah, it has a fun poster. It's one of those like, look at that movie. It's kind of cute and silly, and people have bags over their heads for some reason. And these guys are, and it's called Happy Hour. So, but yeah, initial interest, hell yeah. But for the rest of the movie, no.
So, moving on. I'll go next. I'm sure Mike's got a lot to talk about. For me, I really just kind of got back into the habit of getting around to my movies here. I caught with a rental of Purple Storm, which stars Daniel Wu and is it Josie Ho?
Yep.
Alright.
Emil Chow as well.
Oh yeah, I remembered him. I was like, that guy's hardly in anything, or he's been in hardly anything I've seen.
Yeah, a lot of like minor Jackie Chan movie appearances, but always plays a lot more of a happy character than in Purple Storm.
Yeah. And it was alright. It wasn't a good film, it wasn't a bad film, it was just like a late 90s film.
Yeah, well, a pretty solid early Daniel Wu performance, I've always thought. So.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
and you get that perspective nowadays that you realize Daniel Wu has been around for like 10, 12 years, really. I mean, he did do Young and Dangerous the prequel?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we were going back to 98 and basically 12 years. And say what you will about his, you know, his skills as an actor, which is uneven depending on, you know, depending on the movie. Still, I like his working method, I guess, or habits. He's working, trying to prove himself, working, and even winning awards for his directing for the Heavenly Kings mockumentary.
Exactly.
Didn't he recently announce he was taking like a year or two off from acting?
I don't follow the news sites much, so.
No, I missed that.
Okay. I believe I read that he said he was going to take like a year off or something to like hang out with his wife and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Good for him. That is not bound to the entertainment industry, that he has to appear and whore himself out or what have you. It's good that he can make that choice.
It just gives like Simon Yam a chance to star in 10 more movies. So, and the other film I caught with last week, I actually rewatched the Korean flick City of Violence.
Oh.
The Ryu Sung-wan just ass-kicking flick. I'd basically got the interest for it by listening to V Cinema's episode dedicated to it, and that just kind of got me in the mood to re-watch most of Ryu's work. But of course, as usual, he said, man, I'm going to sit and watch No Blood, No Tears, Crying Fest, City of Violence tonight. Barely made it to the end of City of Violence, and then can't be arsed watching the rest. It's like typical Scottish enthusiasm. So, the story to City of Violence is basically Tae Soo's a detective fighting organized crime, and he returns to his hometown for his high school friend's funeral. And at the funeral, he meets the rest of like his old gang, and they reminisce. But suspecting something fishy happened around their friend's death, I start investigating each in their own way, and it of course it ends up in some pretty creative and like hard hitting fight scenes.
And does it end up that way? I mean, that's the plot synopsis, but does it live up to?
Oh, it does. I was paraphrasing at the end, but yes, it does. Just basically go, like, the action's off the hook. It's easily like the end of the movie could be watched on a loop. Like that would be one of these perfect articles I could write on the site if I could be arsed. But the movie does have a great scene in the middle where the lead's basically walking home and then he gets confronted by like a gang of breakdancers, and one of them goes to kick him, so he ignores it, and then he comes across a gang. It's almost like a scene out of The Warriors where everyone's dressed in baseball gear, and then there's guys with face paint, and then there's breakdancers, and they basically all surround them, and then it kicks off into a giant fight scene.
Awesome, from Tom Yong-gung.
Mm-hmm. So it's got really like loads of like dodging bikes, and of course it's got all the like, the break dancing, so it looks fantastic. And then his mate gets incorporated to the scene, so it's them basically running for like 30 people. So I can't even talk for shit, but it's a damn good film, and it's actually really accessible out there. Dragon Dynasty handled the American release, and Contender Entertainment handled the UK DVD. I'm pretty sure you probably won't be able to find it on the shelves now that I think that company went under.
It's cheap as chips as well.
Aye.
I think I paid £3 for like a 2-disc version from Play or somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm. So it's out there. And if anything, it'll be on rental sites as well. So it's highly recommended.
Certainly Korean imports should be available still as well.
Oh, of course, of course. So, Mike, watched any movies lately?
Can I just, sorry if I interrupt, can I just ask a question about this guy, Rio something? Is he the star merely, or the action director and star, or even a director?
Yep, director, star, action director. According to the podcast I was listening to, he's also responsible for opening like one of the top action schools in Korea.
So he's got a lot of weight behind him, and sort of Korea's main action star. Do you know anything about him, Mike? Do you care anything about him? His name was.
No, I like him. He's his brother's a director as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember what film he directed, but off the top of my head. Yeah, he did the action for Arahan,
mm-hmm.
which I really like. Pretty funny film. There's a couple of really kick-ass fight scenes in that. And he plays one of the baddies. And he did the action for Fighter in the Wind, which I love that film. And he appears as well as a kind of as one of the main characters' teacher later on in the film. So he's not like hella famous in Korea, really. But I like his films.
Well, action is global, so and this has seemingly struck a chord with enough audiences to warrant releases stateside, UK, places elsewhere. So it's not a little underground film that a little underground company picked up. I mean, it was Dragon Dynasty after all.
Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with the action, to be honest. It's good. But I didn't think it was up there with the stuff he's done in other films.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've only went through the three films of No Blood, No Tears and Crying Fist. So obviously Crying Fist is pretty limited when it is actually just a boxing movie. And No Blood, No Tears like resembled more of a Guy Ritchie movie, and it didn't lead up to much action. But City of Violence was the one that seemed like the full-on action vehicle. But it's all the stuff at the end. Like, I loved all the weapons, like with like the knives and all the camera work where they disturb two people when they're having their dinner. And then, of course, it's just like a tea house with like the pullback screens. So they piss off two people and they stand up, and then all the screens behind them reveal 18 other people standing up getting ready to fight. And it's like, it's went from a 2-on-2 to like 18-on-2. And of course they're all armed with knives, and you're like, tension can't get any higher. The one part that would only annoy me, though, is once they actually get through the 18 people, there's one guy left with, like, one or two, like, samurai swords going mental, and they're looking at each other going, no, enough, no more, fuck off. And it just cuts to a shot of them kicking him through a door. I was like, really? That could have been another cool fight.
Yeah, go wrong way around.
Not really gory, it's more or less, well, not in the fighting. There is a couple of moments where, like, one person gets beaten to death, so there's a little bit, the violence shows there, but the rest of it is these poor bastards taking bad falls downstairs, being thrown through tables, kicks to the chin. Usually just the impression of full-on contact.
Right. Yu Sung-won is obviously the director. Yu Sung-bum is his brother, who's his younger brother, who starred in Arahan and Crying Fist and No Blood, No Tears.
But, yeah, the film's highly recommended. And, as we've said, easily accessible. So, Mike, I'm sure you've seen a film or two since you've last been on.
Deliver. Ironically, though, I watched far more Korean films in England than I have done in Korea.
That's the way it happens.
It's because it's really, really bloody difficult to get hold of any Korean films. One, the cinemas, they don't have any English subtitles. Apart from in a few cinemas in Seoul doing the subtitle screenings. And you can't find a DVD store for love nor money. It's easier to buy Korean films in England than it is in Korea, which is a bit of a pisser. So, yeah, I've been on a bit of a Shaw Brothers tear recently. Actually, tear. But first up, I watched Flying Guillotine 2, the sequel to Flying Guillotine. Which is a proper Shaw Brothers classic, starring Chen Kwan Tai. I mean, Flying Guillotines, in their basic, you know, the basic idea is pretty fucking cool. You spin a kind of weird net basket thing with a blade on it around, then you fling it at somebody and pop their head off. Well, it was a top of a dandelion. Yeah, so Flying Guillotine 2 isn't as much of a classic, I don't think. Tae Lung's kind of the main character, but kind of goes in and out of the story and then switches with a woman, the actress Shishi, I don't know her name is, who infiltrates the evil tyrant played by Gu Feng, as usual.
He's back. He was in the first one as well.
And it got some awesome henchmen as well. Chief henchman played by Frankie Wei and Law Lee. So there's a proper good cast. Yeah, it feels a little bit disjointed, swapping through between the main characters. And there's quite a lot of characters in the film. And the action's good, but it's not great. But there's lots of beheadings. The editing is a bit weird. The ends of a lot of scenes seem to like cut off too early. Or some of the action bits, because a flying guillotine is a cool idea, but practical application in a movie is a different matter, especially in a low-budget 70s film from Hong Kong. So actually getting the flying guillotine to look good on screen and to decapitate somebody on screen and make it look good is very, very difficult. So there's some weird editing going on during the film. I don't know I'm not sure if it's Celestial pissing about when they were doing the restoration or if that's actually how it was.
It could be either or, because Celestial were not consistent with their restoration either. They did cut off frames at the end of each shot sometimes, or sometimes they didn't. But it's apparently that frame cutting, the Celestial restoration technique, has affected certain movies in the following way. New One-Armed Swordsman, the death of Chen Xing, a blood spurt through his mouth or something like that towards the end. That's not in the Celestial restoration. It cuts before you see that bloodshed. So apparently a lot of frames were cut out of that particular sequence, but or maybe it was a sloppy cut regardless, but that's an example of what Celestial can do.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's like it's a sloppy filmmaking or just sloppy restoration work, but it's a bit weird. See, Flying Guillotine was quite historical and quite dramery, as well as having some cool violence in it and action. Vengeful Beauty, which is kind of a sort of sequel, a sort of a number three in the series, I think a little bit unofficial. That's a lot more kind of exploitation-y. Lots of blood, lots of violence, girls getting their boobs out. So I think Flying Guillotine 2 kind of falls between the two. Kind of cackling baddies and violence and action with a little bit of kind of the feeling of Flying Guillotine 1. But yeah, it's okay.
How is the actual Flying Guillotine? Because in certain movies it's a very light weapon, lampshade with blades basically. And in certain movies it's a big clunky thing.
Yeah, it's more of the lampshade with teeth.
Good.
Kind of approach, spinning it in the air a lot, flinging it. They come up with the double line guillotine as well, which is great.
Nice.
So you fling it. If somebody stops that, the top of it pops off, and then that takes your head off. Moving on, two more Shaw Brothers films, but both of these are Blu-rays.
Ooh.
Now you're talking about language.
We are speaking the same language, all three of us.
First up is Delightful Forest.
What?
Which was
Where's your death?
Delightful Forest of Death.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad that they didn't retitle it.
Shaolin Delightful Forest of Death.
Yeah. Wait, yeah. The Hateful Forest. That was the worst one I've seen recently, and it's not a recent release, but I think I saw it recently, was the retitling by Is it Dragon Dynasty? I don't know. Retitling by somebody of Battle of Wits, the Andy Lau film, to Battle of the Warriors.
Ah, Dragon Dynasty, sir.
Yep.
That is awful.
Yeah.
So
Battle
awful.
Of Wits, so they're making like it's a stand-up comedy routine on the battlefield.
People are going to think this is a chess film. Absolute bollocks. Anyway, Delightful Forest from Wellgo and their Swordmaster's range. Starring T. Lung again. Not really a lot of other famous people in that. Not an amazing cast, but Chang Che film and Pao Shu Li co-directed. T. Lung's kind of like, at the start of the film, he's out for revenge. Don't know why, but wherever he finds, he beats the crap out of them, kills them. And then says, the police turn up and he says, yeah, I killed him, arrest me. So during the film, he's a super upright and honest kind of character. So if he does something wrong, then he expects to be punished and he doesn't want any favours. So, you know, he's going to get a lashing. So he's like, go on, give him a lashing. And he gets let off, which he doesn't like, from his lashing because general governor, some high up, wants to use him because a thug has come into the local town and taken over the Delightful Forest, which is a restaurant and stuff there, which this guy owns. And this fella beat the crap out of the dude, so he gets T. Lung to go there and beat the crap out of him, basically. It's a good film. I enjoyed it. It's all kind of around T. Lung's performance, really. And he's usually awesome in most Shaw Brothers films. So he definitely carries the film. And kind of a novel bit of fighting. You can see on the front cover of the DVD as well. He's locked up in like this board because he's a prisoner. So like a big board around his neck and his hands are through the front. And a couple of times in the film, he manages to whoop ass, even though his hands and stuff are all stuck in his board and his legs are tied up. Mm-hmm. Turns it into a weapon, which is pretty cool. One thing of note of the film, I think it might be the bloodiest Shaw Brothers film I've ever seen. At the end, which is saying something from a Chang Che film. Yeah. 70s Chang Che film, but yeah, it's incredibly bloody. Place is caked in it. Even at the end, T. Lung used his own blood to write a message in the wall. There's so much blood everywhere. So yeah, it's kind of enjoyable.
Sorry, I'm going to ask you. Can it beat the likes of Hong Kong Godfather, a completely unrelated film, but still delightfully bloody?
I haven't seen Hong Kong Godfather yet.
Ah, God. Yeah, wait for that ending reel. It's a ordinary tried film, and then the ending reel hits. I've never seen animalistic Shaw Brothers violence like that.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing that. Yeah, so it's a good film, all kind of based around Tielemans' performance and incredibly bloody at the end. And now, so that on to number three. In fact, today I watched The Deadly Duo. Yeah, so this one's from Tokyo Shock, Media Blaster's kind of Asian label. And it stars Tielemans and David Chang and Gu Feng, as usual, playing a goodie. No, he's not, he's playing a baddie. it's directed by Chang Che, and I'm not sure the year. I think it's early 70s, maybe 71.
71, yeah.
Something around there.
Yep.
So in this one, there's some... Well, instead of those damn Qing bastards, it's the damn Mongols. The Mongols. you can tell the difference between Qings and Mongols by Mongols having bits of fur on their costumes. Yeah, there's some rebels. They get slaughtered. Tielemans turns up, rescues one or two of them. One, maybe. Gets into a big scrap, runs off. Turns out there's a prince who's trapped in part of the baddie's compound. And all the places are heavily guarded except for this bridge that they want to cross. But the bridge is super, super rickety. Even like a stone landing on it will make bits of it collapse. So they need somebody with special skills to get across. And that man turns out to be David Chang. Yes, that's pretty much it. Find David Chang, get to the bridge, try and get across, rescue the prince. Pretty enjoyable. I like David Chang. Does a lot of his... See, a lot of people hate... I don't know why they hate David Chang. Possibly because of the grinning. Oh. Famous for his grin. And he likes to use it all the time. And I think a lot of people don't like that. I think he looks smug. Yeah, but he's cool. I like David Chang. His fighting's pretty good as well. One of his weaknesses, really. It's usually his kung fu ability, but he's pretty good. Tielemans' awesome. He's got a big axe. He swings that around, chops people up.
Yeah.
I believe... I've got this wrong. I think Balo might be in this.
I missed him, and I even missed Stanley Fung. But I'm sure it doesn't look anything like we expect Stanley Fung to look from My Lucky Stars and with his moustache. But I looked at the cast list afterwards, like, huh, he was in it. And a fairly prominent role, apparently. Maybe the prince himself. But again, early 70s, so...
It was good, but not great. The action's a bit of a letdown on the whole. It's almost exclusively group fights and pretty basic ones at that. Lots of weapons, lots of people bounding around. David Chang's got a cool weapon. He's got like this rod with like a pokey end on it, and he can shoot it out on a chain. So in some bits where there's like guards lined up, he manages to shoot it all through all of them. So they're all on the end of his chainy thing, which is pretty cool. But there's a lot of the four or five people fighting in the foreground and 30 or 40 guys in the background doing their jigging side to side, looking like they're busy, but not actually getting involved.
All too evident on the Blu-ray, which I watched.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, look at those guys. Jumpily, 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 jumpily.
They must be there at the back going, go on, you get in there. No, you get in there. Fuck off, I'm not getting in there. Look how hard they are. The size of that. I'm not getting in there. Let's just look busy. Nobody will know the difference. Yeah, so a lot of that. The action didn't really get me going, but the story's pretty cool, and it has got a couple of good moments in it. Also, the thing about the Blu-rays I noticed is that you can really see the glue sticking the wigs down.
Yeah. go ahead.
No, right, I did see a screen capture of 36th Chamber, I think it is. Blu-ray of that, where you can see the wallpaper lines of this sky.
Yes.
Oh. That's something I don't want to see.
And but that's a properly done Blu-ray because of it. And in the Deadly Duo, you can see boats in the background, apparently. So you know they're on the water for quite a number of shots. Oh, you can see boats in the background. Modern motorboats. I didn't spot it myself, but that Blu-ray comes highly recommended with Tokyo Shock. That looks excellent. And I love the Deadly Duo because it was just a straightforward, you know, assuring Shaw Brothers movie with these kind of guys. You know, the Chang Cheh, David Chang, Dick Leung connection there, the triangle. So it was just a, you know, a very comfortable time and a short movie too. You know, massacre, and then it's over. Cool. And you know, I like that. No, historical complexities. They have like a crawl at the beginning of the film. This is the story of these and these people and how heroic they were. But you know, there's no huge amounts of talking in between. It's just massacre, massacre, massacre. And the bridge sequence is hilarious.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. The bridge sequence is great.
They attempt to get over the bridge many times, and it's kind of feeble, their attempt. And they lose a lot of brothers in the process, and it kind of is hilarious. You know,
I love it. Yeah, well, you know, you just saw our brother fall down. Yeah, but he went too slowly. I think if I run across really, really fast, this is going to work just fine. No, mate. Come on. My other favourite line as well, actually, is when they're discussing their plan to go in. David Chang's like, I've got this plan, but it means one of us is basically going to have to die. And D-Long goes, I'm not afraid to die. And he goes, nah, you're too important. Which one of our group is pretty much expendable? Yeah, you. You go and do it. That poor bastard.
For brotherhood and heroics and honor and written in blood and all that stuff. But it's not the most serious Chang Cheh movie, but I like it as a comfortable commercial ride. And I think I wrote in my review that this is probably the least wordy script Nee Kwang ever had to write, you know, because there's not much dialogue. I'm betting there's like at least 40 or 50 minutes of just fighting.
Yeah, probably.
And a few like,
I mean,
brother, no! A few that, and
in the kind of, in relative to Shaw Brothers films, because I like all Shaw Brothers films, I liked it. But it's not one of my favourite Shaws. On the other note as well, saying Deadly Duo Blu-ray looks great. Delightful Forest, that the Blu-ray looks great as well, I thought.
Cool.
I was very impressed.
Alright, I think it's time for a short break. So we're back, and if you're wondering what tonight's show is based around, it's nothing really. I think we're basically catching up with old friends, and I'm sure you want to listen in as well, because heck, this is basically the Magnificent Trio reunited for the first time in 8 months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Mike's basically been living in Korea for like the past 8 months, so that sounds far more interesting than anything I've been doing in the past 8 months. So, Mike,
you're getting married for fuck's sake. That's interesting, but we have spoken about it. So.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike, what's new? How's life? What's Korea like?
Well, at the moment, it's cold and dark. For the past few months, it's been unreasonably hot. And not just like sun hot, damn bloody humid. Mm. So even when the sun, you can't escape it. If you're not in the sun, it doesn't matter. It's just as hot out of the sun. So I spent most of the time sweating my nuts off and blasting the aircon on as soon as I get home. But the weather's changed now, so it's a bit cooler. I've been doing a lot more drinking than I did back in England. Korean people like to drink. If you go out to eat, do you know soju?
Nope.
It's basically like half-strength vodka made from rice, I think. It doesn't surprise me. Yeah, and so that's the standard drink. So if you go out to have dinner, then usually, if you look back at a restaurant, there'll be bottles of soju on the table. And the thing about soju as well, if you go to the supermarket, it costs around about 50p a bottle. Like a dollar, US dollar. It's super, super cheap. It's about it, really. I work at a school. I live in an apartment. Oh, yeah, actually, something movie related. On October 7th is the start of the Busan International Film Festival. For some reason, they call it the Busan International Film Festival. Even though I don't know any Korean people who call it Busan. And every sign that I see in English says Busan. Never mind. Yes, I'm going to be going there, and I've already made my list of films I'm going to go and watch. So if you're interested, I'll share them with you.
Go ahead.
All right, so hopefully, well, this is hopefully, anyway. I don't know if I can catch every single one. But I hope to see No Doubt, which is the world premiere of a new Korean film. A thriller in a small town about the disappearance of a girl. I don't really know much more of that, but it's world premiere. And then there's a midnight kind of horror film. Triple Bill. Oh. Dream Home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a Hong Kong movie. I don't know much about it, except for I think it's about a woman who goes a bit crazy when somebody builds something outside her house, blocking her view or something. Could be good.
Yeah, it's pretty much about the struggle to get good apartments in Hong Kong slash a very gory horror movie at the same time.
It's actually fun. Then there's I Saw the Devil, which is from the director of A Tale of Two Sisters, mm-hmm. and Bittersweet Life, and it stars Lee Byung-hun, who was the guy in Bittersweet Life. Now, that film was supposed to be, well, it was so violent that the Korean censors made them chop out a fair few bits so it could get to make the highest rating here. I think it's 19.
Oh.
And so they wouldn't have been able to, if they kept it uncut, they wouldn't have been able to put it on at cinemas. But you can show it at film festivals and stuff still. Like, not public screening, you know, I don't know how to word it, but they couldn't have put it on general release like that, so they had to cut it. But for the film fest, they're showing an uncut version.
Awesome.
So I'm looking forward to that. Then there's a US film called Husk, I don't really know anything about it. Then on the Saturday, we have Welcome to Shamatown, which is a mainland China comedy action film about some kind of fabled treasure in a small town and everybody's trying to find it. Yeah. Sounds like a kind of 1960s jape romp. So yeah. It might be right. Then Abraxas, I don't know if I pronounced that right. It's a Japanese film about a monk who's kind of bored and depressed in his life, who used to be in a band before he became a monk, I think, and so he has dreams of being a rock star. So basically goes out playing his own music as a monk. Could be good. There's another Japanese film called Villain, which is, I don't know what that's about really, but some kind of thriller, what's called Villain. Then there's later on is a film called Zoom Hunting, which is a Taiwanese horror film, well, horror thriller. People take photographs of something they shouldn't have, they might have seen a murder, they might not have, a little bit rear window-ish or something. And then, I imagine it all turns bloody and scary. Then Sunday is Reign of Assassins, which is the John Woo co-directed mm-hmm. Michelle Yeoh film. Could be all right.
Yeah.
It's 12. So that doesn't excite me massively. Then after that is 13 Assassins, which is
Takeshi Miike.
That's his most recent film, I think. Who knows? He knocks a film out every couple of months, so it's difficult to keep track. But I think that's his most recent. And then my last film, or possibly last film, is Outrage, which is the latest Takashi Kitano film. Which I believe has got, well, I've read a good review on Twitch, and I hear that it's got really good reviews, kind of a bit of a return to form for him and his gangster kind of films, and he's already planning a sequel.
Wow.
So that should be fun. Oh, there's one more film, which I've put in brackets because I'm not sure whether I'm going to watch it. It's called Strawberry Cliff. It's the first film directed by Chris Chow, who's the screenwriter from Fearless.
All right.
And I believe it's an American film, but it's mostly set in Hong Kong. And I might go and see it because Jenny's going to be probably with me. And it stars Eason Chan. And Jenny loves Eason Chan.
That's good enough reason. He's a talented guy. I don't know about if he's a good singer or not, but I bet she likes him for his singing.
Or not. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She was absolutely gutted when she came to Korea. We've been in Korea for like 3 weeks or so.
Where's and then
she found out on the internet that Eason was actually doing a mini tour in Britain.
Oh.
It's like the first time he's been in like 10 years or something.
Oh.
So she wasn't happy.
And it would have been within reasonable you could travel to whatever location he was touring at. We came to your town even.
Jenny would have made it reasonable.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She would have found a way. But yeah, it was like about 2 hours from where she lives, I think. Easy enough.
All right, it's nothing.
Well, speaking of that, just a sporadic question here. Are Hong Kong singers popular in Korea? Do you see their CDs and buttons and all their shit plastered everywhere?
No.
Good. Not even a Eakin Cheng fan base?
Unless he does something with Rain, then mm-hmm. I guess Rain is plastered everywhere.
Not really. Not as much as I would have thought. But then he's not really. I think he's doing a lot of acting and he's done some American films. He's not really front and center. Although I do hear that he's in a relationship with Jun Ji Hyun. Anyway, I think there's two reasons why Cantopop hasn't really got much of a foothold here. One, Korea produces a hell of a lot of pop music. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's pretty much all pop music. Yeah. I don't really hear anything else. I've never heard any Korean metal or rock or anything like that. Yeah. Having said that, the pop music is of a pretty high standard over here compared to the UK, I think, anyway. Don't take themselves quite so seriously either. And I'm a sucker for a dance routine. And it's kind of mandatory that every band and every song they do has to have a new dance routine. Secondly, you know, the reason why Cantopop doesn't have a foothold here is it's fucking shit. It's got to be the worst music I've heard from any country ever.
Yeah. Unless you go back 20 years or something. Select tracks from select artists. Maybe.
It sounds like one person writes every song in Cantopop. So dreary, so predictable, I can't stand it. And Jenny, well, she doesn't play it all the time, but she sits there, bless her, the Cantopop on, singing away. It's like, oh God, this song, let me guess. It's going to start off with an acoustic guitar or piano, then some strings will start swelling, and then there'll be a key change for the last 30 seconds. Oh, ping, 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 there we go. Three got hit on that. Oh, so dreary, so really fucking dreary.
Well, Ekin isn't too bad of a singer, right? Still?
Well, I'm not.
Do you like Ekin as a singer?
I mean, I've not travelled much outside of his movie-related songs, but sure, he's all right. Mm. A lot of ballad, but...
Yeah, I'm not criticising the ability to sing. It's the actual content of the song. Mm-hmm. Just so boring.
How would have you... felt going to an Eason Chan concert? Is it as dreary? Would have been as dreary? Or...
Wouldn't have gone, because I've got a feeling the tickets would have been really expensive. But if I did go, going to a live concert is a lot different to going to or listening to on YouTube or on an MP3 player. Sure. So I'm sure I could have had fun there. I did go to a K-pop concert because they were giving free tickets for foreigners. Go Whitey! So managed to get into the gig for free, which is a bit sad because at one point there was these big plastic screens outside of the main entrance, so we were standing there waiting for our friend to bring us some fried chicken from outside because they wouldn't let us outside once we got in. It was a bit weird.
You stay Whitey, you get caged.
Yeah, but while we were standing there, there was some fair few Korean kids who clearly couldn't get into the gig, standing there literally with their faces pressed against the perspex, staring longingly into the stadium and at us. And, I didn't even care about K-pop, and I robbed the tickets from some poor little K-pop obsessed 10-year-old. Oh well. That was pretty good. I mean, the problem with that, though, of 2 hours, 2.5 hours of K-pop, is by the end you're like, all these songs sound the same. This one is very much like the one before it, and I'm guessing the one after it will be very much like that. But dance routines, loving that, and lots of hot Korean girls.
Well, I guess that was something that Heavenly Kings, Daniel Wu and company, tapped into, that predictable nature to pop. Because I remember in the movie they were practicing their dance routines. They were quite shit at the dance, but yeah. but the movie, I think, was this mixture of it's mockumentary and the actual media manipulation they managed to pull off in terms of getting a hit. But never in the movie did they come off as good dancers and were never aiming to either. But I remember it was very... They had an impact in the movie, maybe in real life as well. That was kind of enough for them to just make a few limp dance moves and call that the routine. So,
kudos to you, Ken, for bringing my ramblings back round to a discussion about movies.
That's what I do.
Smoothly done.
But I wanted to bring us back a little bit to Korea, just a sporadic piece of news that I read and picked up. You spoke of Kim Ji-woon, BitSwitch Life director, Good, Bad and the Weird director. He's apparently set to make his Hollywood debut with a movie called Last Stand, and that's pretty much all the details we have currently. Well, there's a minor plot synopsis here. It will center around a drug cartel leader who uses a Gumpert Apollo race car to break out of a courthouse and then hightails it to the Mexican border. Sounds like a Robert Rodriguez exploitation movie. It's like In the Wake of Machete. But who knows? Kim Ji-won might do good stateside, or he might not. In 2011, I'm sure we'll find out.
Have you heard of a film called The Man from Nowhere?
No, I don't think
Korean
so.
Film stars Won Bin.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, a lot of Korean girls like Won Bin. Here it's called Ajashi, which means uncle. But the English title is The Man from Nowhere. It's bound to hit some festivals, I reckon, in Europe. And it's going to get a DVD release and stuff. It's been a big film over here. A kind of revengey action film. Which it looks pretty cool. All Korean men between the ages of 20 and 30 have to do 2 years of military service.
Oh, yeah, I remember this story.
And so all my teacher friends, they're all like guys, they've all done their 2 years of military service. In a kind of like, I enjoyed it, good times, but I don't want to do it again. Attitude, but Won Bin went on military service, so he had to put his career on hold, and then he's come back, and Ajashi was like his big film, I think, big hit after military service. But My co-teacher, one of my teachers, was not impressed. He's like, I don't like one bin. I was like, why is that? He said, he left military service early after only 1 year. He was like, ooh, my knee, ooh, my hip, ooh, my back. And yet in his films, he tries to pretend he's got nice killing skills.
Ooh.
Yeah, so he's not impressed.
The public turning against an entertainment profile, that will always end in good, well, maybe favorable box office, but... Because everybody wants to point the laugh, maybe at him enough.
I will add, though, it's pretty much, I'm guessing, probably mostly dudes who hold that opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all the girls I know think one bin's super hot and awesome.
I actually, again, just being sporadic and keeping it Korea and maybe Hong Kong-like. But this tidbit is Korea-like, so I was just wondering if you ever saw Breathless, that small drama.
If you haven't seen it. Yeah, I've heard of it, I just haven't seen it.
Really, really good. I love that movie. Small movie will obviously be thought of as an art house. It will be placed in the art house category and played at art house festivals, but it's just, you know, a drama that is straightforward and understandable and doesn't need to concern itself with symbolism and shit like that. But the only, of course, as Stu explained when he turned me on to the film, was, you know, there's a lot of cursing in that film. If you can get past, you know, the 100 cunts in the subtitles for us, I'm sure he swears like exactly like that in Korea, but once you get past that, man, is that a good film. And I don't have the guy's name offhand now, but the guy who starred and directed in it, but sick talent, and I hope he gets to do like more. And I'm sure he's virtually unknown in Korea, just one of those actors that maybe people have seen but don't know who he is really.
I was standing in the supermarket today looking at tins of tuna when a Korean granny walked past me and swore loudly in Korean. She said, effectively, it was, in England, walking past an old granny going, fuck it. And then walked off.
Jang Ik-yoon, or John Jang Ik, is the guy's name who wrote and directed and starred in Breathless. Is that ringing a bell, Mike?
No.
Yeah, I thought so. Small guy. Great guy. And man, that movie was good. So cheers to for sending over that DVD and giving me a chance to see that movie.
Ah, no worries.
Well, 130 minutes well spent. And The Chaser was rather good. I saw that eventually. And of course you know that movie from before. But it was quite well executed, and I like that it... you know, didn't try to make friends with its audience by, you know, playing the cards. It's going to work out in the end.
Mm-hmm,
you pretty much know that movie's going to fuck people over and hard and bloody. And I like that uncompromising stance, a la Seven. You know, everybody knows Seven is not a light film, to say the least, and isn't a fair film, to say the least. So The Chaser was quite all right. No 5 out of 5 movie, but damn good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm catching up ever so slowly with a few Korean classics. First, I haven't seen. I'm not sure I want to see First, to be honest. It doesn't really look. I don't know. I don't. It's not a movie that lures me in First, to be honest. But I might be wrong once I sit down with those 2.5 hours or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 2 hours, but it feels like 2.5 hours, which is not a good way to sell it. Exactly. Dude.
Two hours of what?
Thirst.
I thirst.
But
a lot of sex in that film.
It is. It's a damn good film. I reckon, like, that was a review DVD I got, and I watched it, like, once, then I watched it with friends, and then I think I watched it again after that. Like, that was the hardest film to review because I liked it so much. And it was so hard to just, like, pen to paper. I just couldn't translate my thoughts to paper, and I'm just like,
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
Song Kang Ho's got a small dick. Wait, no, no. Backspace. But sinister, shocking, blood curdling, and fucking damn sexy as well.
I saw a bit of it on Korean TV. Only the sexy parts. Yeah. Films hit telly on TV here pretty quick. They show it. They showed Goemon the other day, and because it's Korean national holiday here, so they put some action films on. They showed Wanted, Goemon, and Redcliffe.
Did you catch Goemon, or you'd seen it before?
Well, there's no English subtitles, so it's pointless.
Right.
Yeah, I have it. I have it waiting to be watched in it with English subs.
Mm-hmm.
I love Cashin. So I'm looking forward to going on a whole lot.
And I'm one of the few that says that also said it was not bad.
I was the one who was like, too fucking long.
There it is like, only long.
There was like 10 minutes that was good, and the rest was like, come on.
Not two. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Where's the robots fighting?
Go watch Transformers then.
That was worse. I watched Transformers. It's like, there's this Japanese movie that summarizes the best bits in 10 minutes.
That's the no good robot movies ever. Anyway, you just watch some Japanese 70s TV shows or what have you. Some Ultraman. You're bound to find some cool robot.
Get some Kamen Rider.
Yeah.
Get your Kamen on.
Oh, by the way, now we're going into Japan. I saw some clips from a Daimajin TV series. It looks horrible. It's clearly aimed at teenagers, and it's very bubbly and kind of like I don't know, based on the opening credits alone, and you know Japanese opening credits are, you know, they just don't. It's more than just a listing of whoever's in it. It's a spectacle in itself, and Daimajin is a CG creation, obviously, and it's a TV series. And it looks flat as hell, and I don't know where they're going with that, but it looks just... I'm not the audience for that. Mm-hmm. It looks like a series for teenage boys and girls, I guess. And there's a lot of pretty people in it looked like, anyway. But, nah, I'm not going there.
See, my initial hopes for it would have been the turnout of something like if they just basically took the template of Cloverfield.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. That would be...
Just people running for the destruction and then turn around and just seeing shots of that big statue.
And cheap.
Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been...
For a TV show as well.
Because that was, like, the still shots they released, and it was just like, he was sort of just peeking into the shot.
Hello, I'm in it, I promise.
It just like a foot wiggling.
Yeah.
But, nah.
That's a shame. Really, I mean, they really should try and do a feature about him again and try to... You know, as we discussed on Japan on Fires, you can have him trampling around in the modern era because there are evil things waiting to get splattered in the modern era. Then again, you never know if the TV series has that cruel ending where he's like, okay, you teenage boys and girls, you've done your thing, you've looked pretty. I'm Daimajin. See you next week.
It takes a fucking dark age where he's on his hands and knees and the accuser's got a big ass knife trying to cut off his pinky.
Yeah. I would have loved that, but that would have meant Takashi Miike, but it would have meant Takashi Miike co-directed it. You would instantly know that. I know Takashi Miike did this. They splattered the girls and chopped everything off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it doesn't look good. So if you want a reboot out of the 60s movies and have that same feeling, I doubt you're going to get that.
So, how Mike was saying to us earlier that trying to get Korean movies in Korea was a bitch, basically. What about your trip to Japan? How was that for movies?
Better.
Did you come back with a full suitcase?
Oh, no, I didn't buy anything. It was really, really fucking expensive.
Oh, yeah, it is.
But Tower, they had DVD and CD stores there, which makes a change from what I've seen in Korea so far. Yeah, they had Tower Records and places like that. and a fair few kind of second-hand places, which was still expensive. I think my friend wanted me to pick up some Chatmonchy stuff, which is a Japanese kind of girl rock band. Actually play their own instruments and all that kind of stuff. A book and two CDs. The CD was £20. Mm-hmm. One just a regular CD, nothing special about it. Not super rare, not limited edition. Just a regular CD, it was nearly £20. So I didn't get it for him.
Fuck you.
eBay motherfucker.
Yeah, it's just really expensive. Mm-hmm. It's the main problem with go shopping, that kind of stuff in Japan. So, no, I didn't come back. Funny though, also, Japan, unlike Korea, Japan very, very rarely puts English subtitles on anything.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer, because usually their packaging is brilliant.
Yeah. It's the case with the Daima Jeans DVDs. They did put English subtitles on that. Then the DVD Blu-ray box came out. No subtitles, because it was put out by a different company.
Yep,
But I still got it, though, because a friend of mine is putting together a custom version of all three with subtitles and the English dub for the first two. So it was still an investment. And by the way, stuff goes out of print fast like crazy in Japan. Although they do second pressings of movies and CDs and what have you, but still certain things pop up for a very short time and never come back again.
So,
by the way, I got to ask, if you're keen to tell this story, by the way, Mike, it's up to you. But I'm just going to throw it out there and you choose if you want to tell it or not. We heard you met Choi Hak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, did you? I forgot about that. We were in, me and Jenny were in Seoul in an area called Insadong, which is known as a kind of touristy area. Lots of little shops selling all kinds of useless crap. And little bars, little restaurants. And it was cold. I was going to call it, say it's cold as hell, but that doesn't make any sense. It was cold as a really cold hell. Yeah, it was absolutely, I've never been colder in my entire life. I had to stop and buy an extra pair of socks and put them on. My feet were so cold. I had like about 5 layers on. Really cold. So I was not having fun. Feeling pretty miserable. And so me and Jen are like, having a good time. Wandering around this shopping place. And then we're standing there and somebody who looks very much like Choi Hak walks past. And me and Jenny stopped. Looked at each other and went, well, I looked at each other and I said, is that Choi Hak? She went, I think that's Choi Hak. I was like, go and say something to him. She went, no, you go and say something to him. What am I going to say? I was like, I don't know, say, are you Choi Hak? I had a photo. She says, no. I said, but you speak Cantonese. She went, so? He speaks English. I said, I don't think he does. I knew he spoke English really well. I don't think he speaks English. I think you should bust out the Cantonese. Why are you so scared? No, you want to speak to him. Yeah, you do as well. Bet you'll have your photo take with him. No. I was like, do it. No, do it. No. Then we got into a bit of an argument.
Then
we kind of...
over.
It was a bit like the Benny the Jet Erkadez story again. We kind of stalked him for about 10 minutes around the shopping area. And then more bickering. You say it to him. No, you. No, no, no. And then we saw him go into this kind of like mini art gallery thing. And I was like, that's it. Damn it, I'm going to do it. So I just went in there, wandered around a second, saw him, said, excuse me, you Choi Hak? And he said, yeah. He said, yeah, no, sure. I was like, awesome. So then Jenny took a photo of me with Choi Hak, and then Choi Hak's wife said, oh, do you want me to take a photo with all of you? I said, oh, yeah, thanks, great. Yeah, so I had photos, told him I was a fan of his work. Couldn't actually remember any films of his I liked at that time, which would have been good, just to slip a couple of names out there. But I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Thankfully, he didn't ask. He said, oh, thanks. How long are you in Seoul for? Oh, I'm just here for a bit of holiday. Oh, okay. Bye. How's it? possibly the most famous person I've ever met, though.
Mm-hmm. And the ultimate question, did he have his dark glasses on?
Yes.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have recognized him, right?
He's a pretty distinctive-looking fella.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah, what good films has Choi Hart done?
Once Upon a Time in China, motherfucker.
Didn't really like that much.
Sue Warriors from the Magic Mountain, Shanghai Blues, Peking Opera Blues, The Blade.
Seven fucking swords.
Didn't say anything just now. Shanghai Blues. Did I say Shanghai Blues, by the way?
There's like seven of them.
Shanghai Blues was a very good one. And he's got a new movie called with Andy Lau coming out, something Detective D and something.
Detective D.
And it's gotten good reviews.
The Ikin Cheng Zoo Warrior movie.
Oh, that was good. Legend of Zoo was good.
Snap, boy.
Yeah, I think I've only seen Once Upon a Time. Wait a minute. Didn't he do an action film that was good? Hang on. Time and Tide.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. That was a good film.
Nixie.
Got it. Yeah, that's a good film. I should have said Time and Tide. Because I bet most people say, oh, that's Seven Swords. Oh, I like Once Upon a Time.
Damn right.
But I like Time and Tide. I'd be like, ah.
I didn't even like that one.
Cracking those films.
That was a good film.
You got it wrong, son. You should have like cracked out Black Mask 2.
I actually liked Black Mask 2, but I would have rocked some Shanghai Blues with him. Definitely.
What about The Blade?
Oh, too. That too.
Green Snake.
I've got that.
I have watched it.
So, very famous. Of course, Benny Bajet, equally, you know, it's a great idol to many. For good reason.
Cool.
I would have been very intimidated to approach a guy like Choi Hak, because you know so many classics and influential on Hong Kong cinema. One of many that were influential on Hong Kong cinema, to say the least, starting trends. And but again, Shanghai Blues, underrated but little seen. That's the problem. Few are able to see it because it's so unavailable with English subtitles. That's the crime. That's why people like Peking Opera Blues more, because they've seen and can see Peking Opera Blues but haven't seen and can't see Shanghai Blues.
The only thing that kept coming to my mind was he was in Yes, Madam.
He was. He
played one of the kind of small-time crook villains in it.
Yeah.
Had a fairly substantial role.
I Love Maria co-starred with Yon Chum in I Love Maria, the robot comedy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's been in. He's been a goofy actor sometimes. And of course, I think he's in Aces Go Places every now and again.
Aye.
So, wow, what a legend! So cool, Mike. I'm not asking you to upload onto the internet, but if you don't mind sharing those photos, at least with us, that would be cool.
Feel free to put Mexican wrestler luchador masks on any parties that you don't want to reveal.
It's a must. Mm-hmm. I'll send some over, and you can put them on the forum or on the site where.
Cool.
I'll have to have a little route around for the pictures. I'm not sure where.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And his wife is Nansun, I believe. Nansun Chi. So she's all, she's also like been a creative part of Cinema City and studios. So she's both, but a couple active in the film business.
Yeah, I didn't know her name or anything, but she's like a very nice lady.
Very cool. I'm envious, Mike. So it's one of those things you don't expect to meet Choi Hak at the coldest day in the coldest hell imaginable, and you meet Choi Hak, you know. Strange things happen
sometimes. To be fair, the rest of the day, it did kind of kickstart the day. And I was in a much better mood, and it was a lot more fun after that. So, thanks, Mr.
And who knows, after this stretch of many years where he's, according to views out there, not made many good movies. I'm saying according to views, reviewers, critics. Apparently, the Detective D movie has got some buzz about it. It's a period Sherlock Holmes type film with Andy Lau as the detective, I guess. And he has a cool hat.
Of course he does.
So, I think this is actually going to be a good time for me to do my plug-in. Because if you haven't visited the website recently, I have put my name down for the third annual Extra Life Marathon. And to a lot of people, they think, God, what's he going to be doing now? Is he running here? Is he walking? Is he doing this? Is he getting legs waxed, head shaved?
Masturbate for 24 hours?
Whoa.
I don't know.
That was a sleazy spanner through in the works there.
Marathon.
But yes, I am taking part in the third annual Extra Life Marathon in an attempt to raise money for the Royal Sick Kids Hospital in Edinburgh. Me and two friends will be
attending. Royal? Have you just made that name up?
No, that's the name of the hospital in Edinburgh.
The Royal Sick Kids. Okay.
Wow, that's on the nose.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, me and two friends are going to... Jesus Christ, someone just shouted at me. Anyway. We will be attempting to play video games for 24 hours straight from Saturday the 16th of October from 8 in the morning straight through to the Sunday morning. And all the money we raise that day is going towards buying games and handheld consoles for sick kids.
Very cool.
So, if you would like to support us in our battle against pediatric cancer, visit podcastonfire.com and click the Extra Life banner, or visit sarcasticgamer.com/extralife, where Extra Life, where we play games to heal kids.
Very cool. And I doubt there will be much of an attempt. I think you're going to be able easily to do 24 hours.
I reckon, son, that's...
Or you're not that diehard of a gamer? You just play a lot, but not for extensive periods of time?
No, I'm a fragile being. I'm like 10, like an hour after getting up, I want to go back to sleep. For the fact that I have to stay up for 24 hours will probably kill me.
Well, we might do a tie-in with Podcast on Fire. We just haven't figured it out if we're going to do a podcast during the marathon or not. But hell yeah, I'll be supporting it in any way I can.
Just make sure you play some boring games when you've got lots of energy at the beginning of the night. Then break out the fun games when you're starting to get flagged.
See, that's my plan for when there's times where you feel like you're kind of sitting there and you're feeling like the blah. And it's like, that's when you fucking switch up to like Guitar Hero, so you could get, like, I'll get Margaret in and we'll both get the guitars. And that's the thing where you're going to have to kind of stand up and play. So, like, things that kind of get you more active, like get behind the fucking drum kit and play that on it. So just try and work in different elements, or drink a couple Red Bull and then start playing Call of Duty.
And I assume the webcam I sent once upon a time that's in that sombrero I bought you, that's going to capture the entire 24 hours. Warts and all. You have forgotten about the webcam I sent? Good.
Well, the thing is, on the Extra Life thing's all to do with the Children's Miracle Network. And we've all basically put in our own goals and money we want to raise. But of course, this Children's Miracles Network's an American thing. So everything we're raising is in dollars. And so far, out of my $120 goal, I have actually raised $74.
Right on.
And this is before the marathon starts. The majority of it, you're sort of like, you've got your 24 hours to kind of encourage people, because this is a big deal for like a lot of the video game websites. They do like live video streams and basically kind of like encourage people on camera and say, like, right, we're going to give away, like, raise so much money and we'll do this and that and the next thing. Yeah. Like, for my cousin who's taking part, he had this ridiculous, Super Mario mustache that he wore to a fancy dress party. So I'm willing to give him an extra pound for every hour he chooses to wear that, like, fucking mustache. So, I'm close to reach my goal already, but hopefully I could raise, like, a lot more on the day. And even like donations of, say, $2.40 would be awesome. So the website again for that is Podcast on Fire, and that does have the Extra Life banner on it, or sarcasticgamer.com/Extra Life. And all, most if not all the payments are done through PayPal. So you're not going to have to put your card details into like a foreign website.
For a good cause.
Of course. So yes, now it's just down to like my strategy of video games. It's like, yeah. What am I going to do? Like, we have chosen, like, there's going to be Guitar Hero time, but I think me and my mates are going to try and get through, like, the Halo Reach campaign on Legendary. Which will be a bitch, but hey, I've got 24 hours to do it in, eh? And other than that, I've got things like Bioshock 2, and of course I'm going to try and do a complete playthrough of Tales of Monkey Island 2.
It's Monkey Secrets. Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge.
Yeah, aye.
Tales of Monkey Island is the fourth episodic installment.
Sorry.
It's the fucking fifth. Or sixth. I've got them, but it's not Tales.
Just Monkey Island 2 then.
LeChuck's Revenge.
Mm-hmm. So,
You don't want the Monkey Island fanboys after you and harassing you all day, so...
Shit, yeah. taking a step back. It's cool. Leave me alone. But yeah, I'd like to actually thank Phil Mills and James Aylmore for their donations already. Like, it's an insane amount of money. Like, just I can't help but say thank you so much. And of course, it's all going to a good cause, so, like, money well spent, guys.
And hey, Phil Mills and company are doing Kaiju Month at Far East Films. So they've done Godzilla and Gorgo, UK's... contribution to Kaiju, and Rodan, Daimajin, Godzilla Raids Again, Mothra versus Godzilla, so, and it's ongoing. Kaiju Month at Far East Films, and Kaiju's cool shit.
Mm-hmm. Mike, why don't you plug your blog?
Yeah, I've got a blog. I don't really post on it much. But I am in the middle of a two-part story about me whooping ass in Japan. The blog is 20,000 balloons. Blogger.com, something like that.
We'll put right, the website up.
It's got to be in the show post.
It's at Blogspot or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'll get you a link.
Cool. Eventually. So, Mike, feel good about having another episode under your belt?
Yeah, it's alright.
Good to be back.
Yeah, kind of. It is 4:15 in the morning here.
Mm-hmm. We'll probably speak to you again in like another 8 months.
Well, let's not be hasty.
So, I think things are slowing down here. Ken, do you have any other plugs?
Just a brief one for myself. The YouTube controversy that Stu mentioned at the top of the show is I'm basically halfway of there in terms of getting booted off YouTube because of my Category 3 content. Not nudity, but sexual situations nonetheless, and that goes against YouTube's guidelines, and I'm fine with that, but I'm setting up a new site, the portal for my videos, essentially, and the videos are going to be hosted on Blip TV, but because I'm setting up a new site, it's going to be, you know, they're going to be more searchable, I guess, the videos, but Blip TV is not easy to find stuff on, and the website, which is up right now, but the design is not finished, there will be, lo and behold, sleazykvideo.com.
Oh, gold.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So it will be a blog, essentially, in the vein of the cinemasnob.com, that guy with the glasses, the Spoonie experiment, the format, not game reviews, but as such, or that kind of movie reviews, but the format will be essentially that. Nice and simple, as a compliment to the main site, which is still sogoodreviews.com. But YouTube, you're not kicking me out, I'm leaving you.
I'm not fired, I quit.
So that's me done. I'm good.
Awesome.
flagged out.
So, I've been your host for this evening. I'm sure it's all enjoyed me. We've had
Kenneth Bilson
and
Mike.
Guys, see you next time. Aye, the way I'm basically going to do this is we're going to start the show as usual, but just not mention Mike.
Okay.
And then Mike could just go, whoa!
At any time.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I'm not making that noise, dude.
Aw, I was really hoping you could echo that sound.
That's happening.
I'm suffering in Korea, help me!
Let's get going, bitch.